It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 659 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's time for another great Zoop.gg crowdfunding doubleheader week as we catch up with Mark Bertolini from the newly collected Breakneck, then Joe Harris returns to talk about Great Pacific's new hardcover edition. Everything kicks off with my fun interview with Mark Bertolini, who is bringing back one of my personal favorites in Breakneck. Here's how this book is described. In a world where all supervillains have been wiped out, one final villain is on the run from the world's collected heroes. But Ethan Shade is the crappiest villain left alive. We talk about why this is a great time to revive the series, who the various characters are, and what else Mark is up to, including possibly another 5 issues of Breakneck. Be sure you back this crowdfunding project on Zoop.gg before it concludes on Friday, September 27th, so we can all enjoy more of Mark's excellent storytelling. Then it all concludes with the return of Joe Harris to the podcast, who is collecting his classic tale in what he's calling Great Pacific, the Completely Trashed Edition. Here's the description. Chaz Worthington dreams of big things, solving bigger problems, and making his mark on the world. Only no one takes the 21-year-old heir to one of the biggest oil fortunes in history very seriously. That is, until he turns his back on his cushy life of wealth and prestige and seeks to solve an environmental disaster twice the size of his native Texas, known as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Joe discusses how this story came to be, who the characters are, and what else he has heading our way in the months ahead. Be sure to back this high-power Zoop.gg crowdfunder before it also concludes on Friday, September 27. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. In a world where nearly all supervillains have been wiped out, one final villain is on the run from the world's collected heroes. But Ethan Shade is the crappiest villain left alive. Breakneck is back. The return of this critically acclaimed indie series is here, reprinting the first 4 issues along with the never-before-seen 5th issue in an exclusive deluxe hardcover collection. And I'm talking today with Mark Bertolini, the creator of Breakneck, among other things. I think Long Gone, if I remember correctly, and Broken were other books you've done. So how you doing, Mark?
I'm very good. I was actually, you know, I said to my wife today that I was going to be talking with you. And I said, I think I talked to Wayne when Breakneck first came out back in like 2013, 2014, somewhere around there, maybe. I don't know.
I checked on my stuff, and it was 2013 was the last time we talked.
Yeah, so that would have been, I think, right around the time when Breakneck first came out. So it's, well,
we talked twice, and the last time we talked, we were actually talking about the fact that you were hoping to get the 5th issue out by the end of the year. And it sounds like reality got in the way of comics, and so now it's coming. I mean, how long have you had that 5th issue put together?
Oh, 10 years, maybe.
Really? Oh, wow. You know,
yeah. Well, I had the art. The art was all done. But our original letterer, Matt Brown, had kind of retired from doing comics. So it sat with just the art for a very long time. Until I got my friend Micah Myers to letter that 5th issue. Which was only maybe a little over a year ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. Which wow. Is when the gears sort of started turning about doing something with Breakneck again.
Now, what have you been up to in the last couple of years? I've seen you on Facebook, and of course, I have been long awaiting that 5th chapter, because ever since then, I've really enjoyed this book. And I've been waiting for that fifth chapter to come around, but now I'm finally going to get to do it, I hope. And I'm really anxious to read what's going on, because I've always enjoyed your stuff. Things always have a unique perspective on all these storytellings, and that I always like. And so I'm glad to hear that this is a possibility. So why don't you talk to people about Breakneck and let people know more about it?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like you said at the beginning there. So Breakneck's the story of Ethan Shade, who's the crappiest supervillain left after all the heroes of the world teamed up and just massacred the villains. Shade sort of escaped that all that slaughter, mostly because nobody knew who he was. So when I say he's the crappiest supervillain left alive, he was the crappiest supervillain even when everybody else was still around. Just, you know, not very good at being a villain. Doesn't really know how to use his own powers. Makes really bad choices. He's kind of lazy. You know, he's sort of, you know, I always sort of figured he was what I would be if I ever got superpowers, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'd necessarily be some altruistic, you know, do-gooder. I think I might want to, you know, take a walk on the dark side a little bit like that, you know?
Well, the old adage goes, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And, you know, I have often thought, you know, that people are, superpowers magnify certain aspects of their personality, it seems to me. And so this is going to be something to see. Is the fifth chapter the conclusion to the Breakneck story?
It's actually not. So, yeah. So when I originally started working on Breakneck back in the, you know, the mid-2010s, I wrote 10 issues. So there's still 5 more issues. Nothing's been done with them. They only exist as scripts right now. But part of my thought process with running this campaign for the first 5 issues was, if it did okay, and there was some interest in Breakneck again, if I would, you know, try to get some a little bit of a resurgence there, maybe I would look at trying to do something with those next 5 issues. Because, you know, for as wild as the first 5 issues are, it really just gets turned up to 11 going forward.
Wow. Because now this is all on zoop.gg, I should mention. This is happening, and if you want to go to the website for it, it's zoop.gg/C/cat/breakneck, all one word. And as we're talking, you've got a goal of $3,500, but we're still looking to trying to get there. And this is all going to end on Friday. The one thing I don't like about Zoop is I have to do math. Friday the 27th. Supposedly it's going to end sometime. Now, unlike Kickstarter, of course, they don't say what time, so I never know. And of course, sometimes these projects get extended, and so I'm never exactly sure how this is all going to work. But we still got some mileage to cover before that date, so I'm hoping this will come out on the 22nd, and that'll give a couple of days for people to do it. But don't wait. If you want to support, you want to see something that has a really unique turn or twist and perspective on superheroes, be sure to read this book, because I have longed to hear more of Breakneck or read more of it ever since we talked back in 2013. I've been, every once in a while, I kind of look at your Facebook page and see if is there anything going on with it. And I haven't seen Breakneck mentioned very much. So I was grateful when I finally heard, oh my gosh, there's more Breakneck. So
yeah. It was interesting, because the first Breakneck issues were released by a publisher called 215 Inc., who have since become Invader Comics. Mm-hmm. And it was last year as well. They had started reprinting some of their older stuff and having some pretty good success with it. So I talked to them about doing Breakneck, about bringing it back. And they decided that they were kind of moving away from doing superhero stuff, which I totally understood, right? It's superhero comics are a hard sell when it's not Marvel or DC. So, you know, I understood their position. So I just said, like, do you mind if I do something with it on my own? and they didn't. So that's when the idea of doing a Zoop campaign really started to kind of percolate. And, you know, we got the fifth issue lettered, and I thought it was a pretty good incentive to put together, you know, this collection and include that fifth issue that nobody has ever read. Literally, I think we're at 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 people have read it.
Wow.
You know, so I would really like for people to read it. It actually has two of my most favorite gags in it that I ever wrote. Even when I read it now, 10 years later, it still makes me laugh. So
Now, it's an interesting choice because you did Kickstarter, if I remember correctly, before. Now, why go to Zoop at this point?
I really like the model that Zoop has. I like the idea of crowdfunding strictly for comics. I feel sometimes, you know, when you look at like Kickstarter, you know, I there's a lot of comics on there, but I think they sometimes maybe sort of get lost in all the noise of just everything else that's there. Whereas, you know, Zoop is geared just to comic books. Like, I really like the idea, like that, you know, that platform. It's very helpful. The Zoop guys are great because they kind of take care of all the work, all the business part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that I can focus on, you know, promoting it and doing things like talking to podcasts and, you know what I mean, like trying to promote it as much as possible. Well, the Zoop guys sort of manage all of the, you know, the behind the scenes stuff for me, which I really appreciate.
And they're comics fans. That's the interesting thing about that is they enjoy comics. And I've talked with Jordan in the past, and he loves comics and he's a big fan of comics. And so for him, he sees this as a kind of a way to help extend the life of comics or move comics forward. And so I like to support that. I really enjoy what they do. And you're right. Kickstarter has become a great big collection of everything. I mean, I get stuff in there. There's tools and there's socks and there's all kinds of everything you can imagine on Kickstarter. So for me, you're right. There's that I get kind of lost when I start going looking for comics. And on the other hand, sometimes I'll get so many comic things on there, I don't know what's what. I mean, there's a bunch of anime stuff and there's a bunch of other things. But as far as like American comics, it's a little hard for me to find the stuff that I want on there anymore. So I struggle with Kickstarter. But you're right, Zoop, I think, is a step forward as far as trying to get the crowdfund comics. So I when I saw you were on Zoop, I was glad to see that.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, you know, the production that they have is fantastic. You know, I've supported a bunch of different Zoop campaigns. And that's when I, you know, thinking about Zoop was when I decided that trying to do this Breakneck collection as a hardcover would be a good idea because their hardcovers are beautiful. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, the production value, like how good their hardcovers look.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I envisioned for Breakneck. That's what I really wanted. You know, more than anything, I wanted a copy of this to put on my bookshelf. You know, mm-hmm. So this is what I'm just really hoping everyone else feels the same way.
Now, refresh my memory. Was this your first book, or was this one of the first books?
So yeah, so you mentioned Long Gone. Long Gone was the first comic, like the first deal I ever signed. Breakneck was the second, but Breakneck was actually the first thing to ever be published.
Mm-hmm.
So the first issue of Breakneck was my first ever published comic book.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as Long Gone goes, is that book long gone, or can people actually get a copy of it?
That's an interesting question. I think you can find it on Amazon.
Okay.
I only have a few copies of it left. You know, like I mean, that's been a very long time since Long Gone had done anything has been in the world.
Wow, and Broken too. Broken, if I remember correctly, Broken was sort of like if Bruce Wayne had gone a very different direction.
Yes. Yeah. So that, and again, you know, very interesting timing. So Broken was meant to be 2 issues. It was a very short series, and we only ever produced one.
Hmm.
And I worked on it with an artist named Alan Burns. And he and I literally, within the last week, started talking about possibly working on something new, putting a new project together. And I'm really excited about that because I've long been a fan of Alan's work. And, you know, who knows? Again, if things go well, maybe we'll get a second issue of Broken, and we'll see what happens to our Bruce Wayne kid as he grows up.
Did that ever come out? I mean, as far as the first issue, was that publicly available?
It was released on, I can't remember the name of the service. Amazon ended up buying it. Oh. Comixology.
Oh, gotcha. So
where you can find it now, I actually, that's another great question. I wonder if it shows up on Amazon these days.
See, I hate to tell you, but Comixology is another thing that is very difficult to use these days. They got bought by Amazon. And ever since then, if I go into Amazon and I say I want to get a comic book and I mention the comic, it'll go everywhere but the comics. It'll give like medicines and other stuff. Like I'm going, where's the comic books? I wanted to get to the comics. So I'm afraid that Comixology is sort of fizzled in that respect, but I would really like to see more of those because I think I always use digital comics to get things I can't get in paper, and I'd like to see more of that.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. You know, I don't buy as many comics now as I once did. I used to spend a lot of money on comic books, and as I get older, my priorities have realigned a little bit. So I do read a lot of digital comics these days just because, you know, the price point is right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, one of the options in this Breakneck campaign, like you can get a digital copy of it, mm-hmm. of all five issues. Plus, in this hardcover, there's two additional short stories set in the world of Breakneck just to sort of help sort of flesh things out a little bit. So it's a lot of good content for not a lot of money, I think. And I really hope over the next week and a bit that people really kind of come and check out the campaign and help us get a little bit closer to where we need to be.
Well, the timing couldn't be better because as it says on Zoop, if you're a fan of The Boys, The Authority, Powers, Invincible, Breakneck is made for you. And, of course, The Boys has been on cable. I think it's Amazon Prime, I think, is what it's on, interestingly enough. But that has I find that a little stomach-turning to watch. But I was never a big fan of the comic because the TV show, it seems to me, focuses on the heroes, or the quote-unquote, I have to say heroes, and then the boys, which is what the book was supposed to be about. And so, for me, it's not exactly what the TV, the comic was. And I think they've wandered a little bit, but I think they're going from the point of view that they think the heroes are going to be more popular. And interestingly enough, their perspective on heroic characters is that they're not very heroic either. So it reminds me a lot of your book, that show.
Yeah, I mean, I love The Boys, the comic. It was, when it was coming out, it was one of my favorite things. And, I think I watched the first season of The Boys. And had I never read the comic, maybe I would have liked it a lot more. But there was just a lot of changes made. And, and I get it. Like, the changes get made when you're adapting a comic into a movie or a TV show. You know, like, I'm not so naive to think that they're just going to reproduce, everything exactly. So it wasn't really my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. But when I think of what really influenced Breakneck when I was writing it, mm-hmm. it was definitely The Authority. Mm. The Authority was really one of the comics that really sort of, showed me that there's, you can do different things with superheroes, mm-hmm. Before that, superheroes were always very black and white, right? Superhero, mm-hmm. good guy, supervillain, bad guy. Mm-hmm. And it was, in the mid 2000s, 2010s there, where stuff like The Authority was coming out and The Boys, and just showed a different take on superheroes, that you could do them a little more grown up, a little more adult, mm-hmm. you know, and that, you know, that included some violence and, you know, depending on what you're reading, some sexual content, things like that. But mm-hmm. it just, I feel like it opened up a new door for, you know, more grown up superhero stuff. Mm-hmm. At least for me, I know there was a big boom in the 80s. That was kind of a similar thing, but you know, I kind of missed that. So, you know, Wildstorm Comics had a line of like adult comics called The Eye of the Storm. Mm-hmm. And I loved all those books. Like that was really like that. It was a huge source of inspiration for me when those books were coming out. And that's kind of where Breakneck sort of started coming from. I mean, it came from a whole bunch of different places, but definitely that influence of some of those early Wildstorm books was there.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to mention, too, another one of the books that you mentioned has also broken into a prime, and that's Invincible. There's a cartoon of, or they say animated series anymore.
Yeah.
But and that is, that's a show, again, I can't eat before I watch, because there's blood and body parts all over the place. And, you know, I enjoyed the comic much more than I do the show because, you know, you can't help it when it's live action. I can't say live action, but it's action stuff going on and lots of movement happens. You can't help it, but body parts and blood everywhere. And I in the book, that was a lot less dominant, it seemed to me. So I that makes me wonder, I mean, given the boys and Invincible and those things, I has anybody ever approached you about making Breakneck as maybe even an animated show?
You know, it's funny. When we first released Breakneck back in 2013, mm-hmm. not long after the first issue came out, I did get contacted by a supposed producer mm. who was interested in buying the rights and, you know, making it into a movie, and even started, you know, asking who I thought should play who mm. in the movie. Mm. And it was, you know, it was one of those things where I said, you know, if we're talking about the rights to the book, I said, you know, what is your offer? And that was the end of that. I never heard back from him ever again. So, you know what? It made me think about who I would have cast at the time. So I don't know if I would still keep the same actors 10 years later. I'd have to think about who would fit the bill for a Breakneck, you know, live action, whether it's a TV show or a movie.
Well, if you had your druthers, I mean, would you prefer it be live action or would you prefer it be animated?
I think looking at the boys and looking at, you know, regardless of whether or not it's something that you enjoy, like it's really well made. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels realistic, as like, you know, if those, you know, superpowered characters really existed, I feel like that's sort of how they would be. Mm. And that would be right up, you know, Breakneck's alley to do something like that. Mm. You know, so I do think a live action TV series, you know, on a Prime or Netflix or something like that would be a really cool idea for Breakneck.
Because mm. one of the things that turns my stomach is the depth, I think the name of the character is. And he's having an affair with an octopus. And if I hope I'm getting the name's character. The character is all straight, but I don't know that I find a little hard to take.
Yeah, well, I you know, I feel like they you know, especially with the boys, you know, the comic was pretty extreme, and I think they're just going as extreme as they can get away with with the TV show.
Mm-hmm. Well, Breakneck, I don't think would be quite that extreme. Was it?
No. There's nothing that depraved going on in Breakneck. You know, Breakneck, as much as it's a superhero, supervillain comic, and there's a lot of action and things, it was meant to be funny. Mm-hmm. You know, like I used to laugh as I wrote the stuff. You know, mm-hmm. and it was just kind of me throwing everything I could at the wall at the time, because I didn't know if it was going to be popular. I didn't know if I was going to get, you know, further than one or two issues. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of just putting all of my eggs into this basket, right? Everything that I ever wanted to do with superhero comics, I tried to sort of cram into here. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that really is maybe more apparent when you get to issue 5. Mm. And issue 5 leads into more stories. So I really hope we get to tell the rest of the story. But if I can just get these 5 issues and that's all I ever get, I'll be happy with that.
Oh boy, I won't be. I'm going to want to see more because, you know, the thing that I have, everybody always says, oh my gosh, you know, everything that can be done with superheroes has been done. And I don't buy that because people keep coming up with other interesting things to do with superheroes. And so for me, you know, the Breakneck universe is something unique as far as my reading goes, even 10 years later. We've had The Boys and yeah, we've had Invincible and stuff, but Breakneck had a very unique perspective on heroics, shall we say, as opposed to heroism. And so for me, I really liked, you know, that perspective was something different, which I hadn't seen. And I still don't think it's been explored as well as it was done in those 4 issues of Breakneck. So for me, I want to see more of it. I don't want to be happy with just 5. I mean, knowing that there's 5 more issues to go and more story to tell, I'm going to want to see that.
Yeah. And, you know, superhero comics, like you said, you know, everyone says everything's been done with superhero comics, but I feel the same way you do. Like that depends on is the imagination of whoever's working on it. You know, how many superhero comics do Marvel and DC put out monthly? Like there's still a lot of stuff out there. And yeah, maybe some of it's a little derivative and maybe some of it's been done before, but I don't think you can keep publishing comics in that way with such a large number every month if there wasn't something new happening. You know, I don't think people, especially with how much everything costs these days, I don't think people are putting down their money to buy the same thing month over month, you know? So I came at it a little bit different with Breakneck, you know, maybe a bit of a different take on things. But I think there's lots of things you can do. There's lots of ideas that people have, you know, I have another series I'm working on right now. It's only at the pitch stage, but it's another sort of different take on superheroes. And you know, if things go well, I'll be pitching this to some publishers in the new year. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like Breakneck, but you know, taken up another notch or two. So hopefully, again, things go well with Breakneck, maybe you know, that opens the door for some more of these ideas and these stories that I've got.
Well, you know, the art to me was always something unique in Breakneck as well. I like the art style was very different. You know, the background is very white and there's all kinds of stuff going on. The colors it's not for color everywhere. There's color used to highlight certain things. And I always found that very interesting. It kind of highlighted the story in a certain way. It made the story interesting to read and kind of it went in a place that, like I said, most comics don't do that. They mostly do four color everywhere. But to me, I liked the fact that it was not only was the storytelling kind of different, the script, but also the artwork was very unique as far as comics go. And so all that to me made Breakneck a unique experience in which I hate to say it, 10 years, I'm still looking for unique experiences. So yeah. I'd like to see it again.
Yeah. And I mean, you talk about the art. So James Bolton was the artist on all 5 issues. And he had an amazing, very unique style. The kind of thing that you didn't really see in superhero comics, right? It wasn't overly heavily rendered and, you know, it was maybe more impressionistic in places. And all of the art in there the art, the colors, that was all James. That was James taking what I had and just and sort of running with it. And you know, it doesn't look like anything else. You know, you can't really confuse Breakneck for something else because it has its own look, its own feel. And it's too bad because you know, after that fifth issue was completed, James also moved away from comics. He does has a successful photography business, so you know, I'd have to find somebody else to work on the book. So I would, and I do have somebody in mind. If doing more comics, doing more Breakneck comics is a possibility, I do have somebody in mind who has a similar aesthetic. So, you know, it won't be too jarring, I don't think, of a change. But again, it all comes back down to whether or not people are still interested in Breakneck and whether or not we can get some more pledges going and, you know, just, you know, try and get this out into the world. You know, it's, you know, we're running low on time.
Yeah. That's the thing. Now, there's a couple of other, or at least three other projects of yours that you can get on add-ons. There is what's called Bastards Waltz from Darby Pop, and then there's Bigfoot Frankenstein and what's called Cauldron. Well, I'm behind. Maybe if you would, let's start with Bastards Waltz and talk about what that's about.
Sure. So, you know, Bastards Waltz was another comic, another superhero comic that I did a few years ago that was published through Darby Pop. And it was the story of the world's most dangerous supervillain who's gotten old. And, you know, he's been feared for so many years, but, you know, he's lost a step and he's not quite the man he used to be. And there's a new upstart villain that's coming for his, you know, for his spot. And, you know, this big bad guy who has terrified the world for so many years goes into witness protection. And when that happens, all of his old enemies come out of the woodwork to take him down.
I think he'd be hard to find in witness protection, wouldn't he?
You would think, but I guess, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, other superhumans, other superpowered criminals coming after you, you know, they can sniff you out no matter where you are.
Okay. All right. Now was that a completed series? How many issues was in that?
That was 5 issues. And yeah, that was the full series. So that is one of the options here. This is actually, and these books you're mentioning here are, out of my own personal library. So,
Because there's 2 out of 4 claimed the Bastards Waltz so far. So yeah. that one's gotten good. Now the other ones, unfortunately, nobody's claimed yet. Bigfoot Frankenstein. Well, maybe I'd better let you explain that rather than me ask questions. But what book 1, Colossus of Destiny, it calls it. So what's the story with Bigfoot Frankenstein?
So Bigfoot Frankenstein is almost as described. It's a Frankenstein's monster put together out of dead Bigfoots or big feet. I never figure out which how to say it. But it takes the great, 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 many greats grandson of Victor Frankenstein, who comes across the last tribe of Sasquatches dead in the woods, and true to the Frankenstein name, builds a, you know, puts a new body together out of some of the parts and brings it to life with lightning. And the two of them become buddies and they go on a road trip and they fight mutated hillbillies and, you know, it was a lot of fun. It's actually a very fun book, more geared a little bit towards maybe younger readers. So very different from Breakneck and very different from Bastards Waltz. It's really the only book I've ever done that could be enjoyed by, you know, all ages.
So that's who's riding on his shoulders is the Frankenstein.
That's right.
Okay, because I thought it was a woman for a little bit because it got long hair. So I thought maybe that was it. Now, at this point, you've only got three and nobody's claimed any. I might jump in there and grab those if I get a chance. Then the other one is Cauldron Magazine. It's a heavy metal style anthology with a story from you. What's the story that's involved in Cauldron?
So I guess I'll give a little bit of background on Cauldron. So Cauldron, yeah, it's a heavy metal style magazine that actually is made by a bunch of local Toronto creators. Mm. There's, I don't know, three or four. They come out quarterly, mm-hmm. these magazines. So I have a story in here, and it's a really oddball story. Almost difficult to describe. It's called Breaks in Armor, and it's kind of a bit of a trippy, like, you know, are you awake or are you dreaming kind of thing. And it kind of has to be seen to be to be understood.
Okay, basically this looks like a horror book.
It's more fantasy, I think. Right, like I said, more along the lines of like heavy metal magazine, right? So a little bit of horror, a little bit of science fiction, a little bit of fantasy. My story that's in there is definitely more sci-fi leaning.
Okay. Interesting. How long ago did that come out?
This one, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It's always been a big seller at conventions. People really, I don't do a lot of conventions, but I do a lot here locally in the Toronto area. And everybody that goes to, you know, Toronto conventions knows Cauldron, knows the Cauldron creators. So it's always a pretty popular thing here.
Because I'm trying to remember the name of the big convention in the Toronto area. I was going to go with my roommate up there, but I didn't get my passport in time, so I couldn't go. But they went along and they enjoyed that convention, but I can't remember the name of it. For anything. Do you remember?
Fan Expo. Yeah, Toronto Fan Expo.
Yeah, that's the one. They went up there, and of course they had to cross the border, which was great fun, and all those things. And we haven't gotten a chance to go up and do that there. Are you going to be at Toronto Fan Expo the next one they do?
You know what? I applied for it, you know, for a table. So I'll see what happens. There's always, so Fan Expo hits in the summer. I think it's usually August, but there's also Toronto Comic Con, which is March every year. Oh. And I've done that show. I didn't do last year, but I think I did it for 3 or 4 years running. Mm. I didn't have anything new this year.
Oh,
so okay. I didn't really, you know, I didn't have a lot of stuff to take with me. Okay. So, but I am hoping to change. I'm hoping that by next March, I'll have some new stuff to show.
Oh, that'd be great. Unfortunately, my convention going time is probably much less than it once was. I mean, we went all over the place. We went to Seattle. We went to Texas. We went to D.C., Maryland. New York, of course, is my favorite. I love the New York Comic Con because that one is, you can find anything related to comics there, which I really like. And they have the biggest and best artist alley I've ever been to, and I really like it. We actually had a booth, and we literally sold through everything that we had, including reader copies. People were coming and saying, "How much for the reader copy?" So you're joking, right? People have been reading it all the whole convention. Hey, I'll take it. How much? Cover price? We'll take it. Yeah. Really? Okay. I've never seen that before. So that was, to me, that was a real memorable experience with New York. I swear, go there with money to burn. And we were lucky to be in the Artist Alley. And I always recommend that people get there, be sure to get an Artist Alley. We were in other parts of the convention. We hardly sold anything. But down there, man, whew, you couldn't, there'd be people flowing there. And of course, it was open later. All the rest of the con would close at 6 and they'd be open until 7. Man, between 6 and 7, we sold almost so much. It was just a great thing. I'd like to recommend.
Yeah. I went to New York Comic Con. I think it was 2014 was the last time I was there. So it's been a while, but yeah, I had a great time. It was, Breakneck, a couple issues of Breakneck were already out, and my Action Lab series, Scum of the Earth, had just come out as well. So
right.
I split my time between the two booths for most of the weekend. It was great.
I love it. That's a great convention. Talk about Scum of the Earth. That was something I meant to mention, and I'm glad you brought it up. What's the story with that book?
So Scum of the Earth came out through Action Lab's Danger Zone Mature Readers imprint. And so it was really, that was probably my third ever published book. And I think it's pretty fondly remembered. I mean, I have one copy of it left, and I don't even think it's in print anymore, to be honest.
Wow.
So if you've got a copy, hold on to it. Don't put it on eBay. It's it might be worth something someday.
Oh wow! Well, it seems to me that you tend to tell like one complete story, and then you're finished with that story. Is that kind of the way that you tell these things? You get done with, say, Bastard's Waltz, and then you've told that story. Now you move on to Bigfoot Frankenstein or something like that. Is that kind of how you do your storytelling?
More or less, yeah. Because I figure, the way the comics industry is these days, there's not many times you're going to get a real lengthy ongoing series, And so I think naturally gear my writing towards, a mini series, right? Like a beginning, middle, and end. I like to be able to tell a full story. I always try to leave it open a little bit to, just in case there's the chance to do more. Mm-hmm. And, like both these other books that we talked about here, Bastard's Waltz, I left open at the end that we could do more if the story ever occurred to me. Bigfoot Frankenstein says book one. So, there's always the possibility of doing book two. Mm-hmm. But I worked on Bigfoot Frankenstein with an artist named Vernon Smith. He was my co-creator. Like, we basically built the book together, and it was a great experience. Mm-hmm. And he and I are working on a new book that we're just getting started on it. Mm-hmm. So we're probably looking at probably closer to 2026 at this point, but mm-hmm. it's going to be, a fun book, kind of not really a follow-up to Bigfoot Frankenstein, but mm-hmm. a lot of the same storytelling elements, I guess, mm-hmm. But sort of turned on its head. So if you're a fan of Bigfoot Frankenstein, look for this new book that we're going to be putting out. Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, leads to the perfect question. If we want to keep up with you, Mark, as far as like social media and stuff, how do we do that?
I mean, I post a lot on Facebook because I'm old, and Facebook is, I use Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. I still call it Twitter. I know it's not called that anymore, but yeah, if you look up my name on any one of those platforms, you should be able to find me. And, I've been posting about Breakneck for the last 3 weeks, so I'm sure everybody's getting sick and tired of seeing it, but I got 8 more days, so mm-hmm. don't just be prepared.
Well, let me give you a little advice that I learned from talking to Ron Randall, who is a highly successful crowdfunding person with Trekker. And he hired a consultant, and that consultant told him, if you're not uncomfortable with the amount of social media that you're doing, you're not doing it right. So he's literally out there hour after hour in the day, and he's out there promoting Trekker as much as he humanly can. And he often says, I've interviewed him, he said, I did feel uncomfortable doing that much, but it seems to work, because he now, as far as Trekker goes, he doesn't take any other jobs because his crowdfunding for Trekker, last time I talked with him, had made enough so that he could focus solely on Trekker. And I said, wow, I said, there's a lot of comic people who would like to reach that stage too. So I'll just share that advice with you the way that he told me. And I want to see Breakneck come around and finish up, because I'd like to see that story come. One of the things I always enjoyed and it's probably not spoiling too much to say, but Ethan actually ends up on the side of the good guys, but they don't treat him very well, shall we say. And
yeah,
I enjoyed that about that. Again, I'm a big fan of DC Comics because they're iconic. Spider-Man is avoiding his landlord because he doesn't have the money to pay the rent. And I've been in that situation, so I don't read comics because I've had that in reality. I want to see something different, and that's why I like the DC Comics, because they're doing things and their characters are much different than that. So, and with Breakneck, although I do have to say, when that was back at the beginning of this whole more human super characters, and I just, when I saw how they treated him, I felt so sad.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, the first three issues, which were the three issues that were published, you know, in that were in comic stores, right? They were in Diamond Previews magazine and things like that. Mm-hmm. When I wrote this, the first three, I really thought that was all I was going to get. So there is a beginning, middle, and end to that, that opening arc. And I tried to mirror how he's treated at the beginning with how he's treated at the end, despite all these changes that have happened and all the things he's gone through. His lot in life kind of is to be the butt of everyone's joke and, you know, to be, you know, disrespected and, you know, not really taken into any real type of account.
I mean, is that going to continue in the next five, or is he going to make some sort of change?
Without giving too much away, it gets even worse for him, to be honest. Oh, goodness.
How much worse can it get? My
goodness. Well, it can get a lot worse, actually.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Okay. See, now I want to read that. I'm determined I want to see that. Again, it's Breakneck. It's at zoop.gg. The goal is $3,500, and we got to really work hard to get to that. Again, that's going to end up on my calendar is dropped down on my thing. Let me get back up here again. It's September 27th. It's a Friday. So we don't want to wait until then. You want to be sure to get in there and back it before that time, because we don't want the campaign to end where you don't have it. But if I know you, you probably have a contingency plan in mind. If this doesn't happen, do you have other ways that we're going to be able to access Breakneck in the future?
Yeah, so I've been in talks with the Zoop guys about some other options. You know, if we don't get to the goal by the end of the campaign, there's the possibility of, you know, tweaking it a little bit, maybe extending it if we need to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 8 days is the what the current campaign's running, but there's always the possibility of us, you know, extending it, pushing it out a little bit to, you know, just to try and get to where we need to be. And I'll be honest, one of the things I've even thought of, as much as I want to have a hardcover copy of this, maybe we need to look at some other options. Maybe we need to have a soft cover, you know, like a trade paperback. So yeah, that's an idea. You know, if that's the only way I'm going to get this book into people's hands, because I understand the financial reality of some of it, a hardcover is expensive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as nice as it is to have it on your shelf, if you're not in love with having a hardcover, it might be a lot to try and convince people to pay for. So we'll see what happens. But there are other options. I'm not going to rest until this book is out one way or another.
Well, I already have pledged for the deluxe hardcover collection, but I don't see any way to up my pledge. I have to talk with them about it, because I might go back and get the add those other books on, because I like I said, I lost track of some of these things, and I'd like to read them, particularly the Bastards Waltz and Bigfoot Frankenstein. I would like to add those. I wonder if I can change that. I'll have to figure out how to do it. There must be a way to do it, otherwise if not, I'll contact Jordan and he'll tell me how to fix it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if to make any changes to anything on there, they're very responsive. So,
okay.
Yeah, if you need to change your pledge or do something, add something on, I just send them a message. They'll definitely help you out.
Okay, so that'll be good. So what that might my suggestion to folks is on Zoom, plan your stuff out ahead of time. Don't be like me, wondering what do I do. If you look in the whole campaign over, make a good, intelligent decision before you have to go and say, what happened? What am I going to do? Be sure to support and get all your support in as quick as you can and as much as you can, because I know I want to see Breakneck come to a conclusion as well as the other stories. So always a good thing, Mark. I always love to read your stuff because it's always unique and fun to read, and it goes places I haven't been before. And boy, do I like that after reading comics as long as I have. So all I can say, Mark, is I hope this is going to be a big success, and we get to see more Breakneck and more of your stuff in the future. So just keep up the wonderful stuff that you're doing.
Thanks very much, Wayne. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on, and you know, your support for the book. Like, you were one of the first supporters of Breakneck way back when it first came out. So, you know, it's nice to sort of come full circle like this.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Chaz Worthington dreams of big things, solving bigger problems, and making his mark on the world. Only no one takes the 21-year-old heir to one of the biggest oil fortunes in history very seriously. That is until he turns his back on his cushy life of wealth and prestige and seeks to solve an environmental disaster twice the size of his native Texas, known as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. And this is going to be in Great Pacific, the completely trashed edition, collected for the very first time in one single epic hardcover. And we're talking today and welcoming back to the podcast writer Joe Harris. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thanks for having me back.
It's good to talk with you. The last time you and I talked was about 12 years ago. I'm catching up with some people I haven't talked to in a while, and I guess you're one of them. And we were talking about Great Pacific way back then. Do you remember you were telling me that there's 18 issues altogether in this story, right?
Yes.
Okay. And do you remember when this series kind of came to a conclusion?
Well, we launched, what was it, 2012? And I think we probably brought it to a conclusion 2014, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 2014.
Okay, because one of the things
2015. I'm honestly not certain at the moment.
Okay, well, you know, Image has a way of doing stuff. They go a few issues and then they take a break, and then they go a few more issues and then they take a break. So it may be that it was 2016. It's hard to know, but I like this story quite a lot because it's got 1 foot in reality, which.
Right.
My understanding is there actually is like a garbage patch floating around in the Pacific.
It's not a contiguous continent. It's more like a high concentration of plastic just below the surface. So we sort of imagined it, you know, think of it as like a few minutes in the future, sort of, where if nobody does anything, this is what it's going to become.
Mm-hmm. Is that what got you the inspiration for the story?
Yeah, the existence of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch for sure got me interested. I thought the story was so wild. It defies belief. So at that point, speculating from there, it lent itself to a lot of pretty imaginative twists and turns we were able to take.
See, that to me is frightening. all these plastic floating around, and it's, you know, terrible. Of course, it attracts more than just Mr. Worthington there. Of course, there's other creatures and stuff going around with it, and that's what even makes it even worse. But I mean, they have not done anything to clear this up yet.
No, not really. It's a massive problem, and the thing is, there's really not the will to do what. I can't even imagine what needs to be done. Plastic is ubiquitous. I'm not an expert on this stuff, but I know that there's virtually no place on Earth that it hasn't touched at this point. They have found microplastics in food. We found microplastics inside newborn babies. It's to the point where the fossil record, one day when they analyze the time of humans, we're going to be all mixed in with plastic.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That's scary. It's even scarier than all this stuff. But it's, is it because it's outside of the regions that the United States or other countries have? It's floating out in the Pacific away from everybody?
Well, it's kind of like stuff that ends up in the Pacific, particularly plastic, ends up, a lot of the times ends up in this area called a gyre, where you have I think two or three ocean currents basically whipping around in a circle. So whatever gets stuck in that area of the ocean doesn't have anywhere to go, which is why this concentration of plastic is built up.
Now, before I get too far into it, people always get on me because I don't do it enough. This campaign on zoop.gg is going to conclude on Friday, September the 29th. And we want to make sure, don't wait, of course, until that date to jump on board. You can jump on board right now, as soon as this episode airs, because we're going to be, he's got a pretty good goal of $10,000, and he's getting there as we're talking a little ahead of time. We're talking in the middle of the campaign, which is often a quiet time in these crowdfunding things. So I'm sure that anytime somebody wants to jump on board and get in there is a good time, as long as it hasn't come to an end. But we want to make sure that that happens, because you were telling me before we started recording that there might be a news story coming from you and your artist.
Yeah, Martin Morazzo and I would like to do some new material for the book. We have a short story in mind we'd like to do. And if we hit our goal, it's going to be one of the stretch goals that get unlocked.
I'd love to see that. That'd be fun to read. Now, the one thing I should mention, too, is that zoop.gg/letter C as in cat/Great Pacific, all one word. That's a good place to go. And if you go there, there's all kinds of good things. There's a summary of the story. There's preview pages from previous issues and stuff like that, which is really interesting. There's bios of you and your artist, Martin, and other kind of good things there, too. So there's all kinds of stuff you can catch up on if you go there. So I'm just curious, was there a reason why now you're going back to put this together into a collected edition?
Well, I thought it was a good time because we have platforms like Zoop that are doing the crowdfunding thing, but specifically for comics. And I really like the outfit that they've put together. I know those guys a while, and it felt like as this company came out and I saw some of the other collections that they had been involved with, it struck me that it now might be a really good time for us to get Great Pacific back into print. I unfortunately missed the 10th anniversary a couple of years ago, but there's nothing wrong with the 12th anniversary.
Nope. All anniversaries count. So I have no problem with that. Now, we can get a hardcover. As I look through the levels, there's add-ons of good kinds of things, signed issue copies of the first issue, an NYCC variant, a Phantom variant, all kinds of good things. And your artist he's selling original art pages. And let's see, something else down here that I was curious about. Are you doing anything? Because artists can always sell their art pages, so that's always a good thing. Do you have any of the add-ons, or is there something that you're providing?
Yeah, some of those comics are actually from my secret stash. We have another series that Martin and I did called Snowfall. And you can get a complete run of that. You know, Martin's gone on to do this Ice Cream Man series at Image, and he's raised his profile quite a bit. So it's neat to show some of this stuff, his early work, like the original artwork you mentioned that's for sale. There's a couple of other things from myself that you'll see we're going to debut in the add-on section soon as well.
Great, great. Now, a little bit more about the story. I think that this is kind of fun to do. That Chaz actually plants a flag in this garbage patch and declares it his own sovereign nation.
Yes.
And that to me was a real interesting thing because, you know, the reaction of other countries to that is very realistic, I thought.
Nobody really likes it, and he's a criminal. So he is a thief that the United States is after. So, he's kind of tilting at windmills a little bit with this dream of setting up his own country. But and things go predictably or unpredictably bad for him. But I think his aim was true.
Well, it says it escalates into a test of survival as he navigates harsh elements, monstrously mutated wildlife, angry natives from nearby islands, ruthless pirates seeking plunder, and even the United States Navy who comes to drag him back home. Oh, it doesn't seem like anything goes right for Mr. Worthington. Speaking of him, was he based on anybody, a real character, or was he a creation of your imagination?
Yeah, he was. I just imagined him. He wasn't based on anybody.
Okay, because I'm always curious about that. Some people base people on real people.
Well, you know, he's a would-be industrialist. So there are. I read up on a lot of these people in preparation for writing Great Pacific. So there's a little bit of Andrew Carnegie in him. You know, a little bit of J.P. Morgan, Henry Ford. People who fancied themselves envelope pushers, sometimes rightfully, sometimes self-deludedly, but there are little aspects of those characters in him.
Mm-hmm. And the island has attracted, we talked about mutated things. If you look at there's a double page spread that shows birds with two heads, yeah, and all kinds of things going on and all that, boxes and bottles and all kinds of thing on there. The amazing thing is that he can actually stand on the plastic and he doesn't go sinking down in. I guess if it's gotten to that thick of a level, you can probably stand on it.
Yeah. Well, that was part of the, you know, we sort of hyper realized it a little bit to tell this speculative fiction story, but what he goes out there with the tech, he steals this technology from the company that his family founded, that is used to terraform the plastic. So as the story goes on, we learn he's not really interested in cleaning it up. He wants to make it more solid so he can build on it.
Oh, wow. Now, he's the only one there for a while, but if I remember the story correctly, somebody else comes on the island?
There are a number of people. He goes out there with a friend, his personal assistant. There are pirates that end up on the island. There's a character named Zoe who is a bit shadowy and mysterious. She crash lands in a plane on the island. And so you've got various people coming in to visit over the course of the story.
Interesting. Because so many fascinating aspects to this. And it was actually a little prophetic, it felt like, because all this stuff going on mirrors some of what I think is going on today. So it's really quite a very strong and a forward-looking story. So I really thought that was great.
Thank you.
It's really good. So 18 issues, I guess, is altogether. Do you know how many pages is in this going to be in this collected volume?
Oh, God. Math. let me do a quick calculus for you. Okay. It will have approximately between 400 and 500 pages. That's as close as I can get to you. I think it's 450 maybe.
That's a pretty good guess.
It should be a nice fat volume, something you could easily kill bugs with if you had to.
See, I like to buy hardcovers that are kind of thick because every once in a while, I want to jump into a story that's going to hold me for a long time. And a book that thick is going to hold me for a while, which I'm going to really like. So that I think is a terrific thing. Now, see, it says on here 420 plus pages.
Oh, well, there you go, the plus.
On the hardcover one. So I guess that there must be extra.
We don't have the final page count yet because we're going to be adding some back matter and some bonus material, things that I don't think have ever been seen before. And we don't have a final page count yet, but that's a good ballpark.
Yeah, it says 420 plus, so that makes sense. And you can buy the digital version. I'm going to sign up for the hardcover version, which I really like. Now, you can get the hardcover signed. It doesn't say by who. I guess it's by both of you, it looks like.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good.
And no get small fee because Martin lives in Buenos Aires. So.
Oh, takes some time. And then there's also a remark level that you can do. 10 out of the 20 people have claimed that, so that's a nice thing. You can buy retailer bundles. There's a tip jar. And then we get to the sketches and the signed issues, as I mentioned. All kinds of all good stuff on this. There's the complete run signed. I'm taking it that's out of your personal. That's your stuff. Okay, so they get that signed. Very good. All kinds of good things on there. It's going to be really interesting to see. And I'm so fascinated. I hope this really is a big success because I would like to see this story come back and get into the public consciousness again because of it's science fiction on some levels. It's political intrigue on some levels. And it's also on other levels too, you know, fantasy and survival tale, it says at one point. So there's all kinds of good things for this. And I would love to see more people get back and get into reading at Great Pacific. So I'm hoping this turns out to be a big success.
Me too. Thank you, Wayne.
So, as we said, it's going to end on the 27th on Friday, and you want to be sure to get in and do it as soon as you can, because the sooner you get past the $10,000, the sooner you're going to get to the stretch goals, and those are when the good things start happening as far as that, like that extra story, which I want to read. So I want to see that happen in there. So, well, if we can, let's talk a little bit about some of your other stories and the things that you've been working on. You and I talked before, and you were telling me before we started to record that they're reprinting Spontaneous. Is that true?
Yeah, Spontaneous was reprinted earlier this year, so you can get it in paperback now.
And Ghost Project 2?
Not yet, but Ghost Project is on the – it's imminent.
Okay, because I like both of those stories. I think I have the hardcovers of both of those because I really enjoyed those. Those were – now, there's science fiction / fantasy stuff that grabbed me. I thought that was wonderful stuff. And now, you had done some stuff with other organizations that may not be with us any longer. Are there things that you can talk about? I mean, are there projects that are going on that we should be aware of?
I can't really give you the details, but I'm currently, over the past year and a half, I've written a bunch of stuff that'll be announced in 2024 and 2025, including two new series and three graphic novels. So I've got a lot that's coming down the pike.
Now, according to your bio,
I can't tell you the names or anything.
Well, there's some stuff on the bio at zoop.gg. It says that some of the stuff I had not heard before, and I'm trying to find it. It says that you wrote a popular run for agents Mulder and Scully on the X-Files, and your scripts were later adapted into chart-topping audio releases from Audible. But I looked on Audible, and I couldn't find them.
I think it's off there now. That's the problem. You can get them on CD.
Oh, I have to track that down. One's called The X-Files Cold Cases, and the other one's called The X-Files Stolen Lives. And it's the voices are David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson, the original voices. So, and it garnered multiple award nominations, which is always good. So I'm going to have to track those down. I guess I'll have to go back to eBay and look on there and see if I can find them there.
You know what it is? It's these companies keep getting eaten by other companies, which means this stuff has to get re-released at some point. Because at this point, Disney owns the X-Files.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you were doing the book when it was on, when it was coming out from IDW, right?
Correct, yeah.
Do you remember how many stories you told for the X-Files?
Total across three or four series of varying lengths. Mm-hmm. About 60 issues.
Wow. That was good. Because that was, there's another show I would like to see come back. X-Files was wonderful stuff and crazy, crazy
people
storytelling.
Love the X-Files, for sure.
Well, I miss those. It'd be fun. If they'd ever do another X-Files book, I'd love for you to go back to writing that. That would be great fun.
Now, I disagree with you.
There's some other stuff in here that and unfortunately I'm a little behind on some of your stuff. There was a book called Wars in Toyland that came out from Oni Press. I don't know anything about that. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a holiday themed graphic novel about a young boy who discovers this world within his toy box that he shared with his missing brother, who's gone missing recently, and he discovers that there might be a chance to bring his brother home. But first he's got to rally these toys who live in fear of this despot, who's this overstuffed teddy bear named Roxbury. So this boy Matthew has to figure out how to defeat this rotten bear, rescue his brother, and somehow get home.
Wow. That sounds like that would make a great animated movie or something like that. That would be great. So I have to track that one down. I did not catch up on Rockstars. That came from Image as well. What was Rockstars about?
Rockstars was about a couple of rock and roll detectives, specifically. There's this young guy named Jackie who has this strange power in which he can see the hidden messages in rock albums. And he can not just figure out the truth behind some of the greatest rumors in rock and roll history, like Paul McCartney is dead, stuff like that. But he sees the connective tissue. And he realizes there's a giant conspiracy that exists underneath all of rock and roll. And there are some nefarious people who trade in some nefarious stuff. And Jackie's got to get to the bottom of it all.
Okay, I got to catch up on this stuff. And then there's another one called Disaster Inc. from Aftershock. What was that about?
Disaster Inc. followed a group of disaster tourists, who are these people who usually they have a lot of disposable income and not a lot of societal self-awareness. And they pay handsome amounts of money to tour places off the beaten path that are usually quite dangerous and you wouldn't be caught dead visiting, like war zones and other catastrophic places on Earth. It's a real, and it's a problem in the world. Disaster tourism is a thing where people who have no business showing up at the scene of an emergency or military action just to sort of have the experience of being there. It's a problem, and specifically with Disaster Inc. is it follows these tourists as they attempt to tour the site of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear meltdown in Japan. And what they discover when they sneak under the fence and a guide takes them out, you know, so that they can tour this ruined area that's been closed off from the rest of humanity. They find that this particular area in Japan, which has a very, very old, strong tradition of samurai protection, between the nuclear fallout, all of the bones buried in the ground over thousands of years, The ghosts of these undead samurai show up to sort of deal with these intruders.
What could go wrong with a situation like that?
What could go wrong?
Now, one more, and then I want to talk a little bit about your Marvel time, which I also wasn't aware of that. There was a book from Mad Cave Studios called Past Time. Was that like a time travel book?
No, not exactly. That's one of the books I was talking about that has not been announced.
Oh,
so
okay.
I can't give you any. No, I won't give you any details, but it is in the bio, so it's not a problem. Okay. No, but it's not a time travel book.
Okay, all right. So at least we have some idea. Do you know when that book is going to come out?
2025.
Next year. Okay. So yeah, we're getting. I always forget it's September, and we're getting close to a new year. So that'll be kind of fun. I'm looking forward to that. Mad Cave Studios is doing a lot of stuff I like these days, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, what do you like over there?
Oh, I have been buying their stuff for a couple of years, and oh gosh, you know, the problem I have is when I read so much of them, I can't remember a single issues or single ones. I talked with the guy who was the head of that company one time, and I just had to tell him how much I love the stuff they do. And the guy that was in charge of PR at the time, he was a fun fellow to talk with too. So I've done all kinds of interesting stuff with Mad Cave, and they had a guy that was a kind of a superhero / private detective kind of a book that came out way back when they first came out. I really loved it. I thought it was really great. And I that's how I got to talk with him about it. I think, I forget the name of the gentleman in charge, but he does some amazing stuff. And so that's great. I'm glad other people are starting to do some Mad Cave stuff. So it's great fun because for a long time he was really the only creator there. But it's kind of fun when I see other people get their chance to strut their stuff there. So they've been around for, I think, 10 years now, I think.
Yeah. They just celebrated their 10th anniversary.
Good for them. When they first came out, sometimes when a new company comes out, it gets my attention and I'm like, oh, I hope that company does really well. And that was one of them. Some of the other ones I really loved have gone by the wayside, unfortunately. But that one, I'm so happy it's still around after 10 years. So I'm glad you're doing something for them. I think that's going to be a good combination.
And hopefully we are all around for many more.
That's my hope. We need more good companies doing good storytelling and stuff like that, because some of the companies are not doing that these days, unfortunately. Yeah. Anyway, I thought it'd be fun to really launch into real quickly. It says in your bio, as a young creator at Marvel Comics, Joe launched the Spider-Man spinoff Slingers and the Bishop the Last X-Men series. So right. Bishop is still around. And Spider-Man, of course, is huge. I mean, you know, Batman is the big DC property, and Spider-Man is the big Marvel property. So maybe Slingers kind of helped propel Spider-Man up into that level because, man, he's got enough books out. But Slingers, was that like a team book?
Yeah, it was involved these four personas that Peter Parker had adopted while he was wanted for murder. I don't remember what actually happened, but there was an event called Identity Crisis at Marvel, and Spider-Man had to assume these four different personas, like I said, Ricochet, Hornet, Prodigy, and Dusk. And after that storyline was over, Marvel wanted those characters, those alter egos, to go to new people. And have a young team book, and that was my first monthly work at Marvel.
How long did that go? Do you remember?
Went a year, I think.
Okay, well, that's good. team books and stuff like that these days. It used to be team books for everything, and now you can barely find a team book around. So that's great. There was a Spider-Man Noir book that came out recently that I kind of liked, and they're talking about making that into like an animated show or something.
Yeah, I saw that.
Kind of intriguing. Now, Bishop, what was it like to write Bishop, who's of course a mutant, and they're trying real hard to get the X-Men back these days? What was it like to write Bishop back in those days?
Oh, a lot of fun. I think he's a great character. He was a character. I remember when he launched in the Marvel Universe when Wills Potasio first drew him,
mm-hmm.
or Chris Claremont's Uncanny X-Men. Yeah, we were able to do a lot of fun stuff. It was a time-tossed series featuring a time-tossed character as well as his little retinue of supporting players like his sister Shard and Trevor Fitzroy. And we got mm-hmm. to tell if we told a cool fantasy story that was unlike, if I remember correctly, it was unlike what a lot of things. It was not like much else that Marvel was publishing at the time.
Okay. We won't make any editorial comments on that because I happen to be my leaning is towards DC because I like iconic characters. Marvel has Peter Parker skulking around the hallway because he can't pay his rent and he doesn't want to see his landlord and stuff like that. You know, some of us live in that world. And so I don't necessarily want to read a book about that somebody going through that. Although I do have to say I was a little perturbed when they turned Peter Parker into Bruce Wayne. He had this huge company and he was had this and it was all over the world and stuff like that. And I was kind of like, that's not Peter Parker.
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't even know that. That's surprising to hear.
That tells you how long it lasted. Well, you know, Marvel has had their fun. They had Tony Stark become a teenage hacker at one point. That lasted very little. That lasted, I think, about 4 or 5 issues, and woof, it was gone. It went so fast that it was kind of like when Captain America was revealed to be an agent of Hydra.
Yeah, that didn't make anyone happy.
Woof, boy, that shot out so fast. You know, I remember reading it and going, this ain't going to last. This ain't going to make it. There's some stuff you can do in comics, and it's considered revolutionary and exciting and unique. And there's some stuff you do, no. So that's I always get a kick out of that. It'd be fun to have you go back and do Bishop again, because they're doing right now that X-Men cartoon. What's it called? X-Men?
Oh, X-Men 97.
97, that's what it is. I kept saying 87. I knew that wasn't right. But Bishop has played a big part in that cartoon.
Yeah, that's right. That's right in that era.
Mm-hmm. He did that, so he's around in there. And, of course, what they do, unfortunately, in cartoon is they cover, like, 10 issues in, like, one episode. And so I'm kind
of... Yeah, I know. I've heard that.
My head is spinning. I'm going, wait a second. That took a lot longer in the comics and stuff, but, you know, because maybe Disney has decided they like things to go faster, and so that's going on. So if you were going to go back to Marvel at all, if they said you can do any book you want, is there a book in Marvel you'd like to write?
Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because... Star Wars, of course, is the comic store where I go. Star Wars is the biggest franchise as far as sales goes. Star Wars is huge. So it's stuff like that. Now, my problem is I kind of folded out of the Star Wars franchise when like they did about the 4th or 5th movie. And right. I watched it and I was like, I don't know. Maybe you could put some interest back in that. That would be nice to see Star Wars be interesting again. I know all the Warsies are going to get real mad at me for that, but it would be nice to have it be something a little more interesting like that. So, and I won't ask any more because who knows, someday they might actually ask you and that would, and you don't want to show your cards at this point for that kind of stuff. So you said there's a couple projects you're working on you can talk about. Is there stuff you can talk about that you're working in?
At present, actually, no, I can't.
Well, but that's a good thing. I mean, that means you're working on stuff and it's top secret stuff. So when it comes out, we'll know better.
Yeah. I don't want to get ahead of anything. Like I said, it'll be rolling out toward the end of this year and into 2025.
Okay. So one thing we can look forward to, because thanks to the thing, is Pastime coming from Mad Cave Studios. So we want to keep an eye out for that. And let's see, you used to have a website, joeharris.net. Do you still have that?
I do.
Oh, boy. Okay. So if we want to get some information about what you're doing, that's a good website to go to? Sure. Okay. Now, what about social media? Are you on social media these days?
Yeah. You can find me at Facebook. I'm Joe Harris. I'm at Instagram. I'm Joe Harris, NYC. And from there, you could find me. I'm all over the place.
Okay. Now, what about conventions? Are you doing cons this year?
Yeah, I'll be at New York Comic Con in October.
Okay. Any other ones? Because, of course, that's right in your backyard, as far as that goes.
Yeah. There should be some in 2025. I just haven't nailed them down yet.
Yeah, New York is my favorite because it's the opposite of San Diego. You go to San Diego, the whole downtown has been taken over by comic stuff. People walking around in costumes, restaurants become taken over by Cartoon Network and stuff like that. You go to New York, if you walk two blocks away from the Javits Center, they have no idea.
Never know there was a convention.
That's right. They don't know it's there. And then my favorite thing was we got on the subway and there was a guy dressed up like the Hulk and he had the Hulk costume on. Nobody even noticed him or paid attention to him. I got a huge kick.
And you could have been there anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Ah, we see that all the time in New York kind of stuff. One of the things I enjoyed was that I was walking along. I was hungry. And of course, there's Italian restaurants like every block. And I was going down to one place and said, pizza slices, $10. And then I went to the next block. It was $5. And the next block I went, it was $1. And I thought, does that mean that this is the worst pizza because it's only $1? But, of course, my budget required I take the dollar pizza. And it wasn't too bad, actually, as far as that goes. But downtown New York is a very different animal than other places. So New York, although I have to say, New York Comic Con, if there's anything related to comics you want to find, go to New York Comic Con because they'll have, like, the glasses with the comic images printed on them and stuff like that. Anything that you want, even tattoos, stickers, you name it, it's going to be in the New York Comic Con. And they have, I have to say, one of the very best artist alleys that I've ever been to.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Are you going to be in Artist Alley?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you, because we were there and we were selling a comic. My roommate had put together a comic, and I swear people went there with money to burn. We were there, and we had sold through almost everything. We had one preview copy of this one comic, and people kept coming up saying, how much is it for that? And we were like, what? You want to buy a copy that everybody's been reading the whole convention? Yeah, I'll take it. Okay, not used to that because usually people are worried about condition and they wanted it. And we took a lot less home because everybody wanted to buy and buy and buy. And it was really great. And it's just so much fun to be there. And I hope you do well because I imagine that people will be just like they are every year. They'll be there with lots of money to get to you.
It is. It's the greatest artist alley. It really is.
It's astounding. It's just what I couldn't believe it. Now, maybe you can tell people, what will you have for sale there?
I usually sell a lot of X-Files scripts and things like that from my run on the X-Files. I make up nice packages of them for sale. And I'll also have trades and hardcovers of my books.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, we'll see if there's some Great Pacific promotion to be done as well.
That'll be great. Well, let's see. It's the 27th. So unfortunately, by the time New York Comic Con comes around, that'll be over, unfortunately.
But we'll see. We'll see what the next chapter is.
Okay. Well, and sometimes Zoop extends some projects. So it could be a week or two later. If that happens, it'll be right in New York Comic Con for you. That'd be great. Good things to see, good stuff to do. I hope you get to do a lot of good stories because I always enjoy your storytelling. It's people use the term dense all the time. They don't mean it. It's not insulting. It means that there's a lot going on. You have to pay attention. And I like that about your writing is that I can't just flip through it. Some books I see word balloons and I just flip past them. And say, they'll show what that's about later. Your book, I got to read. I need to do it. I love a book that makes me pay attention. It's just like a TV show. I like a TV show that makes me pay attention. I always tell the story about Lost. When Lost was on, I would be on the computer, and when music would start to play in the background on Lost, I would turn from the computer screen and look at the show. And then when that was over with, then they'd go back to just chatting and stuff, and I'd go back to my computer. So I hated that. So that's keeping you busy, and hopefully this will be very successful, and we'll get to see more from you. And I would love to see Mr. Worthington come back and that news story. I want to see that. As soon as we get on here, I'm going to sign up for the hardcover book. It sells for $85 as we're talking. Of course, it's probably the number claimed will go up. There's 16 claimed right now. I'll go up to 17 as soon as we get done talking. And I'm looking forward to being given. I'd love to have this. I swear to you, there's a really good story. I want it in my hardcover collection so that I can pull it out and read it. And I think this is one of those stories that I want to keep around. And I highly encourage you, if you have not signed it, let me tell you again, go to zoop.gg/C/Great Pacific. And it's called Great Pacific, the completely trashed edition, appropriately enough. And you can go there and be sure to support it. And we get to see more good stuff from Mr. Harris and Mr. Morazzo. And I would love to see that. Any chance that you guys are going to do more comics together in the future besides this?
Potentially, we talk about it. Mm-hmm. We're both kind of busy. Martin's on doing a really amazing job on Ice Cream Man. We'll talk about it. So we'll see.
Any chance you might write an Ice Cream Man story?
That I don't expect to, no.
Okay. Well, it just seems a natural fit for me. I thought your stories would be kind of fun to put into that universe. So, well, Joe, all I can do is say is much success. I hope Great Pacific, the completely trashed edition, really flies. And you not only do you meet the goal, but hit all the stretch goals and make good things happen with it. We get to see that extra story. I'd love to see that. So just keep up the wonderful stuff.
I will endeavor to do my best, sir.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/major spoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/major spoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.